Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, Crash Course in Music. One band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And Hammond, today we're back into heavy metal. I'd say we're almost approaching hair metal, but certainly approaching glam pop metal, right?
Well, these guys, I think these guys could actually be credited with creating that pop metal thing that happened in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. Because it really were, they were kind of two different worlds. Heavy metal almost seemed like the antithesis to pop for a while. Mm-hmm. And these guys kind of built a bridge that made it say, hey, it's totally cool to like both pop music and heavy metal, and we'll give you both together in one song.
Yep. And they for a while there, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing them at all.
Yeah. Let's tell people who we're talking about. It's Def Leppard. You probably saw the title of the show. You probably noticed it when you were downloading it, so it's not really that big a surprise. But yeah, we are talking about Def Leppard. And this was a fun week. I knew I was going to like it, but I was surprised how much I liked it. The stuff I knew I was going to like, and then the stuff that I didn't know, I liked a little bit more than I was expecting to, because you hear about these bands who do branch off into, well, we're going to do a straight ahead rock album and kind of branch away from our roots, or we're going to do some country influence stuff or whatever. And I liked in some form or another, I kind of liked everything I heard this week.
I think I might have struggled a little bit more than you did, because we'll talk about it, but I fell off in the early 90s.
We talked about that last week when you fell off the Leppard bandwagon.
And I was surprised at how much like some of the later stuff, but the things that are hits, and the things that are not for a reason. So finding that middle ground for our playlist was actually kind of a struggle for me.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. Well, I might have put one hit on there. Maybe one. All right, well, let's get to it. Who are Def Leppard, you may ask?
Huh?
I don't know who's going to ask that, but they are an English rock band formed in 1977 as part of the new wave of British heavy metal.
I really, really want to do like a new wave of British heavy metal genre show sometime, like in the next couple of seasons.
All right, so we'd have Def Leppard. Who else?
We'd have Iron Maiden, of course. Then we'd have like Diamond Head, Sweet Savage, Saxon, Raven, White Spirit, Samson, Hallowed Ground, Girl School, Witchfinder General, Tigers of Pantang, Venom, Angel Witch, Blitzkrieg, you know.
Okay, you lost me at Iron Maiden. I've heard of Girl School, and I think that might be the only other one besides Def Leppard and Iron Maiden in that list.
Oh, you have to know who, like Merciful Fate.
Saxon. I've heard of Saxon.
Yeah, and Merciful Fate and Diamond Head. Though you have to know those guys.
I don't think I do, but I've probably flipped right by their albums in the discount bin of the mom and pop record store.
Maybe.
As I was looking for something else to begin with those letters. since 1992, the lineup has been Joe Elliott on vocals, Rick Savage on bass and vocals, Rick Allen on drums and vocals, Phil Collin, not Phil Collins, but Phil Collin on guitar and vocals, and Vivian Campbell on guitar. Yes, and also vocals. That explains why they have such great harmonies, is because everybody in the band sings.
That's right.
That lineup right there is the longest lasting lineup of the band.
They are not fooling.
Oh man, is that what we're pretty much expecting for this whole episode? Rick Savage, Tony Kenning, and Pete Willis formed the band Atomic Mass in 1977. Joe Elliott was brought on as the singer. They changed the name to Def Leppard with a change to the spelling to seem less like a punk band. Steve Clark joined the band in 1978. And just before recording the EP, Kenning left the group and would later form Cairo. Frank Noon played on the EP. The 1979 Def Leppard EP was a three-song EP that featured Ride Into the Sun, Get Your Rocks Off, The Overture. Two of those songs ended up on the debut album, and they developed a strong following and were considered a leader in the new wave of British heavy metal movement.
And rightfully so. I mean, they kind of paved the way with bands like Iron Maiden and, you know, and these other bands you don't know anything about.
Right, exactly. So one of the first things I remember when I first heard Def Leppard, and people go ahead and start typing your mean emails to me, but I thought, oh my God, they're just like ripping off the whole Led Zeppelin style of a band title. Like instead of spelling it, you know, D-E-A-F, like Led Zeppelin spells it L-E-D, they're going to do D-E-F. And then just kind of expecting that people are going to be like, Def Leppard, I don't know, what about that band sounds familiar, but...
Yeah, but the nice thing is they did distinguish themselves sonically from Led Zeppelin.
They 100% did. And it was basically those first, you know, those first few songs that I heard them like, oh, okay, well, these guys aren't trying to sound like Def Leppard or trying to sound like Led Zeppelin. They're very different. But it was the first thing that I saw or thought of when I saw the name.
in fact, so much so that I actually on the Sorrow is a Woman sounds very much like that Kisco song, I Was Made for Loving You, which came out a year before.
Okay. Wow. Kisco. I've never heard Kiss's disco period described like that, but it's completely logical. So that song, by the way, is from the 1980 album On Through the Night, which reached number 15 in the UK as their debut album, if you don't count the EP, which is an EP, so you shouldn't count it as a debut album. They toured the US with Ted Nugent and AC/DC. Talk about baptism by fire. Like if you can't get noticed touring with Ted Nugent and AC/DC with your inaugural album, holy cow.
And let's throw in the dates too, 1980. So Ted was at the peak of his Tedness and AC/DC was still in their crazy days.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Wow. During a show at the Reading Festival, they got pelted with cans and bottles filled with urine. It was sparked in part by feelings that the band was trying to appeal to American fans and by an article accusing them of selling out to the American market. Again, it's their first album. How can people accuse them of selling out?
Because there are a lot of songs like Hello America and there were a couple of songs on the album that seemed like they were very much kind of pandering to American music fans.
That's crazy, though. It just seems like such a give the band a chance already. You know, it's not like you can say, oh, their first four albums were awesome, but then this fifth one, man, they really sold out. It's like this is their first real album. Their first, like,
yeah.
All right. The recent Metal Evolution series, Joe Elliott said that all the bands that day suffered at the hands of the crowd and that the media exaggerated it.
I will throw this out as a public service announcement. If you can find the series Metal Evolution or the documentary A Headbanger's Journey by Sam Dunn, you need to watch him because he's really a hero of mine and he's an excellent music documentarian.
Oh, cool. All right. I'll check that out. Maybe Quello has that. I like Quello.
Yeah.
In 1981, they released the album High and Dry. This basically marked the start of their most successful time as a band, lasting through the early 1990s. The album was produced by Mutt Lange. He helped define and shape their sound.
Okay, so Mutt had been producing with AC/DC. Mm-hmm. And Let It Go could have so easily been an AC/DC song by the way it was done.
Mm, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny because Mutt Lange, from all accounts, is a major perfectionist. Like he will nail down a track and make you redo it until you absolutely get it 100% right. And he was Shania Twain's husband for a while, right?
Is that I know nothing about Shania Twain, and everything I learned about Reba, I've already forgotten.
Fair enough. The standout track of High and Dry was Bringing on the Heartbreak. It was also one of the first videos played on MTV in their first few months of existence back in 1981, 1982. And they toured with Ozzy Osbourne.
Man, how do these guys line up with some of the stalwarts of heavy rock so early in their careers. It's amazing.
Yeah, they know a guy. Phil Collin was brought on to replace Pete Willis, who was fired for excessive alcohol consumption on the job.
I love the fact that when I was doing the research that everywhere I looked, it specified on the job.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what he was doing in his free time. It was when he was at work.
If you're a member of a heavy metal band, isn't excessive alcohol consumption kind of de rigueur? Like, isn't it part of the job?
Well, and also, I mean, for a while, Metallica was called Alcoholica. There's some shirts floating around that say that.
That's probably one of the lost Def Leppard albums, too.
Alcoholize.
Alkalize, right. In 1983, they released the album Pyromania. With the songs Photograph and Rock of Ages, the band moved into a much bigger arena of popularity. Arena being the key term there.
Yeah, and then also they got targeted by Tipper Gore and the PMRC with... That album got held up, and there's that famous quote from her where it says, "Burn the building, burn, burn, burn."
Is that what she's saying? She's describing with the album cover?
Yep.
Lovely. Speaking of that album cover, it was considered controversial, and many stores wouldn't carry the record.
I didn't know Walmart was around then.
I don't think they were, but I'll bet you Kmart didn't.
Yeah, probably.
Kmart sucks. Photograph took over Beat Its Place as the most requested video on MTV, and it dominated the album rock charts for 6 weeks. Rock of Ages and Foolin' pushed the album to sell 6 million copies back in 1983, more than 100,000 every week that year.
Wow. That's nuts.
It was a huge album. I mean, I remember it being a huge album. I was just starting high school. Oh, no, just ending junior high. And I just remember everybody had that album. Everybody was carving Def Leppard in that logo into the desks at school or writing it on their notebooks.
Yep.
Their peachy folders. Wasn't that the thing? Like everybody had the yellow peachy folder with the basketball players on it for whatever reason.
Yeah. What was that about?
Because basketball players and peachy folders go hand in hand. You know, you shoot some hoops and you put stuff in your peachy folder, but it's funny how it became like it was the thing you did with that peachy folder is you would draw the logos of all your favorite bands on the cover of it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Everyone did that.
I wish I still had mine. I bet I had rock stuff. I had the Van Halen logo, but then I also had like weird stuff like, Squeeze and Aha would have been right around that time. I probably would have had Aha on there.
Falco.
Well, let's not go crazy. Let's not go crazy. Thriller was the only other album to sell more albums that year than Pyromania.
And like we said earlier in the show, this is the album that is usually held up as the start of the pop metal trend of the 80s.
Yeah, without a doubt. It was certified diamond, which is 10 times platinum.
I've mentioned this before, but I want to tell the story now.
Of course.
In 1988, I took a trip to China. It was 6 weeks. I toured China. And I had made 12 mixtapes.
Okay.
For me to listen to while I was traveling through China.
Yeah.
And it was for my little yellow sports Walkman thing. I also,
the yellow one, right?
Yeah. And before I'd gone to China, a few weeks earlier, I'd actually gone to Korea and traveled around in Korea. While I was in Korea, I actually bought a bootleg version of Pyromania. It was all in Korean, and it was just a bad quality cassette, but you could totally tell it was a bootleg, and I didn't care because it was Pyromania, and it was cool. So when I'm going through customs in Beijing, all of a sudden, my mixtapes are confiscated, and the only thing I am left with for 6 weeks is my bootleg copy of Pyromania.
Bootleg Pyromania. Oh, no. So man.
Yeah, so I got really, really, I mean, this might be the first time I've listened to Pyromania since like 88.
Just because it's like you can not only every lyric, but every note and every drum beat. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. That's funny. Around the same time, I'd have to see when that album was released, but when I turned 16, it was during a trip to England. And same kind of thing. Okay, 1985. The summer of 1985, I went to the UK for a trip with my dad. Took me all around to like where he grew up and stuff. And I made mixtapes. And funny thing is, like, you wouldn't be surprised, Squeeze and Sparks, very prominently featured on those mixtapes. Oh, yeah. Listen to them all through England. And the not really bootleg, but the cassette that I bought in the UK was Dream of the Blue Turtles by Sting.
Oh, wow.
And that was okay. One that I played over and over and over again, even though I had all those other cassettes. That was the thing that I played over and over again, like sitting on the train, just watching the scenery go by and listening to Dream of the Blue Turtles.
See, yours was by choice.
That's true. They didn't take all my other cassettes away at the border. That's funny. In 2003, Pyromania was ranked as number 384 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time.
I need to look at that list because I feel like it probably should be higher just because of influence.
It really should, yeah, I would think. Because, again, I mean, you look at the start of the popular British heavy metal in America, and this is album number one, I think, where it all starts.
Yeah, this should be at least in the top 250.
I would agree, yeah. Or top 100 for me, really. On December 31st, 1984, Rick Allen lost his left arm in a car crash. After the crash, he was determined to keep playing the drums. He worked with Simmons to develop a custom drum kit. The band never sought a replacement. After some practice time, he called the band in and played the intro to When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin to show his progress.
So you told a joke that will not be repeated, but I wanted to acknowledge that you told it and it was funny.
Okay. Well, you can't like... You can't. No, we can't.
No. Yeah. I think tension, unknowing, inside earness, it's all good.
Okay. What if I said it and you edited it out and just had it for the patrons?
Okay, that's good. Thank you, patrons.
He returned to the stage at the 1986 Monsters of Rock show. In 1987, they released the album Hysteria. As of 2009, it's been certified 12 times platinum, having sold 12 million in the U.S. and 25 million worldwide.
Which shockingly dwarfs Pyromania.
Very surprisingly, because I remember Rock of Ages and Foolin' being massive, massive hits. And I know, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me is the big, big hit for them. But it feels like it was a bigger bar on the bar chart, or that much of a bigger bar on the bar chart than the other things. You know?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you remember a TV show called People back in the 70s?
I remember a TV show called Real People.
Okay. Yes.
With like
yes.
Sarah that, Purcell. Mm-hmm,
that's
and
the
Skip
one.
Stevenson.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Then they also
oh my God,
did
how
a,
do I remember? Wow. All right.
Then there was also one that came on Saturday's mornings called Kids Are People Too. Do you remember that?
Yeah. The letter R.
Yes, I think that's, yeah, too, I think
right?
so.
Yeah.
I know Kiss played on that. I'm wondering if, because I feel like Def Leppard played Rock of Ages on that.
Oh, wow. If they did, I don't remember it, but that would be fantastic.
I feel imagine. Somewhere in the recesses of my memory, I feel like it. I do remember Kiss vividly doing it.
Huh.
But man, I don't know remember. If they did.
I don't even remember. I mean, I remember Kids Are People Too being a thing. I couldn't tell you what the format of the show was. Was it just like stories about kids who do cool things?
Yeah. And then they'd have like a musical act that appealed to the younger kids and, you know, the now generation.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I don't remember that at all. The album Hysteria spawned 7 hit singles, Love Bites, which made it to number 1, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Hysteria, Armageddon It, Animal, Rocket, and Women.
And, Love Bites was a precursor to Why I Fell Off the Def Leppard Truck.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now see, this is interesting because I would have thought that this would have been, okay, so this is a precursor to Why. Okay. I can't wait to hear, to hear Why.
And I'll throw into Animals, the first top 10 or first of 10 top 40 US singles for them in 87.
Wow. Yeah. I'm looking at that list. I think there might be one of those songs in my playlist. But this is here's the thing, like, you know, you look at bands who see some success, and they're able to take advantage of that success and say, okay, now we can make the album that we want to make, or now we can kind of go into our experimental Swedish jazz phase or whatever. But Def Leppard knew that their market was largely prepubescent boys, prepubescent teens. I mean, those are the people who were buying their albums, and it was kids like me in junior high and high school. And none of us wanted to hear something different. We wanted to hear more Pyromania. Give us more Pyromania. Mm-hmm. And Hysteria was definitely, for me, more Pyromania.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. This album spent 105 weeks on the charts. That's just over two years, people. Sales were slow until they released Pour Some Sugar on Me. Some call this their signature song.
And I guess we'll know here in a while, won't we?
We will. It's funny because in 1987, I had no idea what that means. I mean, I still probably don't. I think I have guesses as to it, but I do remember there were, and I want to say this was an MTV thing, where they poured sugar on people.
Huh.
Like they...
That's weird.
They just had, like they had, I think it might have been an interstitial between music videos. We're Def Leppard and we're going to pour some sugar on you. And it might have been, you know, now that I think about it, it was like probably a tie-in to a concert giveaway or something, or a tour or something.
It seems like a much more aggravating version of the green slime from You Can't Do This on Television.
Yeah, I think so. It was just basically like opening a bag of sugar and dumping it on somebody. I don't even think it was like mixed with water, you know, like sludge.
That's not my favorite thing.
No, but it's really easy.
I
think that slime stuff probably gets in the cracks of your ears and up your nose and stuff like that, whereas this just kind of like pours down and
starts to get sticky.
Maybe other people have some in their hair. I don't. That's like... this song, Pour Some Sugar on Me, was ranked number 2 on VH1's 100 Greatest Songs of the 80s in 2006.
I fully and wholeheartedly disagree with that statement. There are lots of other songs in the 80s that I feel like rank above that song.
Well, yeah, it's...
And it doesn't have to be rock songs. There are tons and tons of well-crafted, well-constructed, well-performed, well-written songs that came out. Sure. And that's not one of them.
But think about it, and I'm not defending it, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. Greatest songs of the 80s don't necessarily mean favorite songs. Was it a defining moment in, like, was it influential?
Yeah.
I don't think it was. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at sales, if you're looking at...
I could see a top 20, top 15 maybe if you're pushing, yeah. But to number 2... We had Thriller come out that in the 80s.
Well, and as I remember it, okay.
We had Synchronicity come out in the 80s.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that was that was awesome. Yeah.
Duran, Alan Parsons. I could keep going. There's
bands we've even done on this show.
Yeah. There's too many of them not to have that be number 2.
I'll tell you this. I mean, easily there were 200 songs I liked better than Pour Some Sugar on Me from the 80s, at least. But doing some research for this album, the Hysteria apparently was not selling very well until Pour Some Sugar on Me.
No, you're right. It springboarded them into superstardom.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's it. I don't know. But I don't know what VH1 used as their criteria, and they probably, if they were to come up with that same list now, I'll bet you it would be a completely different list.
I'd hope so.
Yeah. Tear It Down, which was the B-side of the single Hysteria, was getting play, and that prompted them to rework the song for the next album.
So I saw these guys in tour in 1988. Mm-hmm. It was one of the loudest events, period, I have ever been to.
Oh, I'll bet.
My ears rang for days afterwards. Yeah. I mean, it was insane how loud that show was.
Wow. Yeah. How was the show otherwise?
It was fun. It was
Lincoln.
It was fun, but I was going with friends in college. It was my freshman year of school. We went, and it was more the environment of hanging out with these guys that, you know, you've just met and kind of developing those relationships as a freshman in school. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. I enjoyed the show, enjoyed the music for the most part, but I was also really ready for it to be done when it was done.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fair enough. Around that time, Steve Clark had been battling alcoholism for a while and had been in and out of rehabs. In mid-1990, he was granted a six-month leave from the band. And then Steve Clark passed away from a mix of prescription drugs and alcohol in January of 1991. The next year, 1992, they released the album Adrenalize. It's funny, when I was listening to this and telling my phone, Siri, when I was telling her to play this album, she pronounced it Adrenalize, like adrenal gland.
Huh.
But I think of it as adrenaline, Adrenalize.
I think you might be right. I think yeah. that your phone, in all of her wisdom, yeah, could be wrong.
I think it could be. This album reached number one on the album charts, produced two singles, Let's Get Rocked and Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad.
No way.
The album was recorded as a four-piece after the death of Steve Clark. Vivian Campbell was brought into the band in 1992, and he was best known for his work with Dio and Whitesnake.
And you can see Vivian doing his guitar wizardry up close and personal on the making of the Hearing Aid, the documentary that's available like on YouTube and elsewhere.
Mm, okay.
Because Dio was the pushing force of that, mm-hmm, and Vivian was one of the featured guitar players during that whole the process.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Yeah, this is, okay, if you're saying that this is about when you're starting to fall off the wagon, mm-hmm, the Def Leppard wagon, I'm kind of getting with you here. I mean, this was, Let's Get Rocked and Have You Ever Need Someone So Bad, the two singles from this. Playing those, it was almost like I was hearing them for the first time because I couldn't remember them being hits.
Okay, well, if you go on a few more lines, I will get to my fall off.
I know, I see that now. I don't want to step on. Okay, 1993, they released Live in the Clubs, In Your Face. Also, the Retroactive compilation contained the acoustic hit Two Steps Behind from the hit action film Last Action Hero.
There's a magic running through your soul, but you can have it all.
It also
contained
Miss You in a Heartbeat.
So this is where I fell off. That song, okay. Two Steps really? Behind, okay, pushed me off the car and I never got back. I didn't even try hanging on. I just bounced into the median like an action hero and never looked back.
And I noticed that they had two different versions of that. They had the acoustic version of Two Steps Behind, then they did a rock version.
Yeah, and they both pushed me off the car.
Okay, good to know. With both a mix of an electric guitar and a big wooden one.
Yeah, I just, they beat me over the head with that, that acoustic-y, five-man acoustical band kind of, mm-hmm, Tesla thing that happened to be all the rage at the time.
Right, and kind of extreme. I was thinking like the Gary Cherone.
Yep. Yeah. And what's weird, though, is I like them doing it. I didn't like Def Leppard doing it. Hmm. I felt like that was them pandering. That was them kowtowing to the trend. And sure. I couldn't do it anymore. And I was done. So everything after this, it was, mm-hmm, new to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, good. Well, I'll be curious to see what you thought of it. It was new to me too, because I kind of forgotten about them. In 1995, they released Vault, which was their greatest hits collection, containing stuff from 80 to 1995. Contained a new song that was a hit in the UK, When Love and Hate Collide. But depending on which version you got, There were different track listings for North America, UK, and Japan based on which songs were hits in each of those different areas. On October 23rd, 1995, they entered the Guinness Book of World Records for performing three shows on three continents in one day, performing once in Tangiers, Morocco, then up in London, England, and then over in Vancouver, Canada. So it's not even like they picked, like, you know, Turkey and then right across the bridge from Turkey into Europe, or, you know, like,
yeah,
they didn't pick stuff like that. I mean, these were decently divided locations.
It kind of reminds me for Live Aid.
Live Aid, yeah.
Phil Collins played in London, then flew across on the Concorde and played in the U.S.
Yep, totally remember that. That was huge. It was a huge deal. The next album, Slang, came out in 1996. I'm trying to figure out if the album cover is like, is it trying to spell something else? It looks like, it almost looks like if you hold it upside down, it says boob. But maybe not. I don't think that's what they were going for. It marked a big shift.
I think another co-host is rubbing off on you.
I think so, maybe. The album marked a big shift in musical direction and darker lyrics. It also featured a stripped-down alt sound. I was kind of comparing it to Collective Soul right around this point.
There are a couple songs. There, the title track actually felt like some sort of weird, twisted Jesus Jones tune.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's good. That's a good point. I might change something I said in my... playlist. They worked and recorded these songs together in the studio, which produced a more live sounding album as opposed to doing it apart. There was a major drop in interest in this album from how successful they were a decade earlier.
I think I have a reason why.
Do you think?
Yeah. Blood Runs Cold is a country tune, but don't tell anybody.
A little bit, yeah. It was listed by Q Magazine as one of the top 10 albums of 1996.
What else was released in 96? Was there just a bunch of pile of poos?
No, I mean, I can't think of a time when there was a year where at least something good didn't come out, right?
Yeah.
1996 had The Score by the Fugees, had Odelay by Beck, New Adventures in Hi-Fi by R.E.M., all right, I'm kind of seeing where they're coming from. Anima by Tool, which we've talked about on the show. Beats, Rhymes, and Rhythms by Tribe Called Quest. Tupac had All Eyes on Me. Rage Against the Machine had Evil Empire.
Okay, well.
I could kind of see
I could see how this would be in the top 10.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Sadly. I mean, Cardigan's First Band on the Moon. I mean, they're albums that I really liked in 1996, but...
well, I can see why you like them.
Oh, Second Toughest of the Infants by Underworld. I got to remember to put that on my bicycle playlist, because that's such a great
actually,
album.
Actually, Underneath the Radar would probably be a good bike ride song, too, by Underworld.
We need to do... Okay, we're putting Underworld on our list, because it's like... Almost two different bands we're talking about, even though it's all Carl.
What's his face?
Carl Hyde.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Underworld, Underneath the Radar, Underworld, pop, new wave. And then they said, this isn't what we want. We want to do electronica and house music. And
so we have the Hammond half and then the Brian half.
I like both halves.
I know. I'm just kidding.
And I even like Frewer.
Oh, wow.
Which was the band that he did before that. All right. So, yeah, we're adding them to the list. So there you go. 1996. Maybe it kind of was a crappier for music. Rick Allen used a semi-acoustic drum set.
That's a semi-acoustic.
Semi-acoustic. Okay. I thought it was like the brand name from Simi Valley, California or something. A semi-acoustic drum set during the recording. We've lost Hammond. I just broke Hammond.
I've got tears rolling down my face.
You know, from See Me.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, good. The band was also featured on Behind the Music and brought them back into the mainstream after being pushed to the side by alt-rock and grunge.
Duh.
Yeah.
Because everybody got pushed to salt by alt-rock and grunge.
Kind of, yeah. Exactly. 1999, they released Euphoria. It was almost like they were trying to say, you know what the problem with that last album was? It wasn't a medical condition.
It didn't end with Oria.
That's right, exactly. It actually did mark a return to their original sound and style.
And this really does fit them a lot better. They're that kind of major key, harmonize-y, happy rock. Really is there
harmony? Oh, their signature stuff is the harmonies.
Yeah,
the harmonies and the metal, right?
Yeah,
and it's for them to not do that. It's like Reba without the twang. Mutt Lange even returned to produce. Lange.
I always thought it was Lang.
Mutt Lange.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's say Mutt Lange.
Okay.
And if you wrote me an email from the first half of this soundography, then you can yank it back. I'm going to say Mutt Lange from now on. The first single from this album was Promise, and the album was actually certified gold. Yeah, it just didn't feel the slang for sure. Just did not feel like a Def Leppard album, and even Adrenalize, not so much Adrenalize. They were placed on the Walk of Fame in 2000.
I didn't say that they were granted a place on the Walk of Fame because you have to pay for that. They say you can have a spot, but then you have to pay.
Yeah.
To get it done, so it's not really you're being allowed a spot. So
well, yeah, but and that's the award. We're going to allow you to do it. You know, they won't do it just anybody. I couldn't walk up and say, hey, I've got the money. Can I have a star on the Walk of Fame?
They should do a podcaster's walk somewhere in San Antonio. Not San Antonio, in Austin.
Austin, or it should really be in Ontario, California.
Yeah.
Because that's really where the, where all that stuff, that first podcast expo.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect. I think Ontario, California has the space. I don't think it's a problem. You could even do it at the Hilton where we all stayed. In 2001, VH1 produced a docudrama called Hysteria, The Def Leppard Story. It starred Anthony Michael Hall, yes, the nerd, or the geek, as Mutt, and Amber Valletta and as Steve Clark's girlfriend.
Okay, so I watched part of this.
Really?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where is this available?
YouTube.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Cool. And Anthony Michael Hall is definitely Anthony Michael Hall playing Mutt Lange. And they do actually push that he was a perfectionist in the studio.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. And then Amber Valletta, interestingly enough, here's a poll. She was the mother of the child that was kidnapped in Transporter 2.
Oh, her. I remember her so well. I don't at all. Is she done? I'm sure she's done other things.
She's done other things, but that's actually, I watched Transporter 2 while I was in Paris in French.
Oh, okay.
And you didn't need it to be in English because it's the Transporter series.
Sure.
But she was kind of, when I saw him, I'm like, oh, she was, what's her face's mom in the Transporter movie, Transporter 2.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. That movie, by the way, covered the era between 1977 and 1986, and it produced some of the highest ratings that VH1 had ever seen. And it's also available on DVD.
And YouTube.
And so, YouTube, apparently.
Yeah.
I'd say check it out on YouTube.
Yeah.
In 2002, because everybody else was doing it, they released an album called X, which moved even more in a pop direction.
Yeah. One of the songs on that.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah.
Sounds a lot like it was one of those live songs, like the band Live.
Oh, yeah. Pushing Copper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Lightning Crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Group
yep.
Live. Yep. Yeah, I could see that. This was their least successful release. And the tour, though, was their most successful since Adrenalize.
Because they were tapping into all those people who were trying to recapture their misspent youth.
Exactly. As and I'm guessing that 90% of the concert was here's some stuff from Hysteria and Pyromania, and now we're going to play one from our new album.
That no one knows the words to.
Exactly. In 2004, yet another Best Of album was released, and in 2005, Rock of Ages, the definitive collection, saw release in the U.S. In 2006, they landed on my radar with an all-covers album called Yeah! With an exclamation point. Yeah!
Yep.
Paying tribute to folks like Blondie, Via the Nerves, the Kinks, Sweet, ELO, and Badfinger.
And this, I steered clear of this album. I listened to it, but I didn't even pay that much attention because I figured if something was going to come of it, you'd mention it.
Yeah, it's funny. I picked this up in L.A. on a trip out there with Tina, and we stopped on a Virgin Records or Tower Records. It was a Tower Records, and saw this. And I'm like, oh, holy cow, Def Leppard cover album. And this was back when the cars you'd rent had CD players in them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's like only 12 years ago. It doesn't seem like it should be, you know.
You see, when I was a boy.
Yeah, we had CD players in our cars. Wow. It is a really solid cover album. And people are going to be very surprised that I did not include any of the covers from this album in my playlist, even though I really do love this album. As a matter of fact, if I were to rank my favorites of their albums, I probably would put this in front of Pyromania and Hysteria.
Oh, wow.
Just because it was them not just doing like it, you know, anybody can do hits, especially with a cover album. Like, all right, we're going to do all these popular songs and da da da. No, they're picking deeper cuts. I mean, Badfinger, Hanging on the Telephone by the Nerves that Blondie also covered. I'm pulling up the list because I want to have it in front of me. But it was surprising that they went.
Well, and also, aren't you a Sweet fan to begin with?
I am a Sweet fan.
Yeah. So
so Hellraiser, not a surprise.
And still, ELO's another
Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah, another band you really like too.
Yeah, absolutely. But then they went like the Congos. He's Gonna Step on You Again, which people probably know as the song "Step On" by Happy Mondays,
mm-hmm.
or the influence for that anyway. Yeah, Driving Saturday by David Bowie. I mean, again, if you're gonna do a David Bowie song, a lesser band would have picked just one of his hits to cover for their cover album. But the fact that they went with something way, way less known than like Starman or Young Americans or whatever, I think speaks to the fact that they were really pulling their influences and not just trying to say, oh, here's popular songs. We're just going to do our takes on them. So I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
I just want to give them credit by putting songs from this in my playlist.
And speaking of Tower Records, have you seen that All Things Must Come to an End or All Things Must Pass documentary about Tower Records?
No, mm-hmm. I think I need to watch that.
Really good. It's really, really good.
Well, it's going to make me cry. I love Tower Records.
I did too.
I walked in there. There was no way I was ever getting, there was one right in Cherry Creek, and there was no way I was ever getting out of Tower Records without spending $150 or $100.
Mm-hmm.
It was always freaking imports. It yep. was like, oh, I don't, this is an album that wasn't released in the US. Oh, and it's got bonus songs.
Yeah. Yep. When I was in Amsterdam, I found a record store there in Amsterdam, and I probably spent 3.5 or 4 hours in there. Mm-hmm. And at one point I had no less than 20 things I wanted to buy.
Yeah.
And when it all boiled down, I walked out with 3 albums.
Wow. Well done.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I couldn't. Which of my babies am I? It's like Sophie's Choice in the record store. In 2008, they released a big pile of garbage called Songs from the Sparkle Lounge. I guess I'm already playing my hand as to how I feel about this album. Tim McGraw is featured on the first single, 9 Lives, and Tim also co-wrote the song.
Hitting back to their earlier, it's a country song.
Right. Except, well, it's a little more obvious when you actually got a country performer on there. They had a couple songs on there, Only the Good Die Young and Come Undone. And honestly, after listening to Yeah, I was like, all right, they're going with the thing of like having a couple covers on all their albums going forward. I love that. But no, it was not a Billy Joel nor a Duran Duran song. However, Only the Good Die Young is kind of Beatles-esque. And while the rest of the album, I think, is borderline listenable, Only the Good Die Young, I think, is actually not bad.
See, and it's weird, too, because the title of the album sounds like something that Panic at the Disco would do.
Well, it actually sounds like it would be a live greatest hits kind of thing.
Yeah, it does. But I can see Panic at the Disco doing an album title of the same thing and have it be something very, very different because it's Panic at the Disco.
Easily. I mean, that's more theatrical. And this, I guess, you know, they were trying to think theatrical for a while. Mm-hmm.
And they did a song with Taylor Swift. So, no.
Yeah, they should have named the album Diphtheria. They did a lot of touring through 2008 and 2009. They played with Taylor Swift, as we mentioned, in a tape show in Nashville called CMT Crossroads. And it was released on DVD and available at Walmart. In 2011, they released Mirrorball, Live and More, which contained three new studio tracks. 2013, Viva Hysteria. They played the entire album. They also re-recorded some of their hits so that they could regain the royalties from their label. It's kind of a...
Yeah, we've talked about this before with people.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like, let's do a greatest hits album that we're going to redo, but it's going to sound just like our greatest hits. And fans who don't know why they're doing it are like... Well, why do that? Why not change them up a little bit?
Yeah.
Vivian Campbell reported that he had developed Hodgkin's lymphoma in June of 2013. He's undergone treatment and is still performing with the band to this day. 2015, they released Def Leppard. Wow, how many albums do you wait to release your self-titled?
Didn't you use this kind of thing, the self-titled, late self-titled album as a part of a riddle or puzzle or something you did for somebody?
Oh, I did. Yeah, it was part of a trivia thing that I did for my Uncle George for a, not really an escape room, but it was like an escape present where each present was tucked into another, like locked into another present or into another box. I didn't use Def Leppard. That's funny. I could have. I did Duran Duran's self-titled and Love and Rockets, but I didn't use theirs. This might be the, like, out of all of them, this might be the longest stretch a band has gone before they finally did a self-titled album.
Not to blow the trend or anything, but Dream Theater self-titled came out really late too.
Did it? Okay. But did they start at the same time as Def Leppard?
No. They started in 80s.
No is the answer that I'm looking for. The band released Let's Go as a video and single from this album. And in 2016, they led Hysteria on the High Seas concert cruise. It's one of those things where you can go hang out with the band on a cruise ship and everybody gets sick, including Joe Elliott, who suffered from laryngitis. And the band performed without him for the first time in their history. Vivian Campbell and Phil Collins sang, and then guests Andrew Freeman, Eric Martin, and Kip Winger. Kip Winger. Amazing they could get Kip Winger. I'm amazed he was available.
What's he been up to?
On stage. Well, I don't think we're ever going to do Winger for a soundography. In 2018, they just released The Lost Session. It's a digital download only, and they have just announced a major world tour for this year. And I believe they're touring with Cheap Trick?
I don't remember.
I can't remember, but it's
all fossil rock to me now.
Right, exactly. When I don't know. I mean, it is like, hey, remember this band? Don't you want to go see them live?
Yeah, barely.
Yeah, I kind of see it. Well, why don't you tell me about their statistics and awards and stuff like that while I get into setlist.fm to prepare for our next part.
All right. So Def Leppard has sold more than 100 million records worldwide. Two albums are certified diamond. They are only one of only five rock bands with two original albums selling over 10 million copies. The others are Led Zeppelin, The Beatles, Pink Floyd, and Van Halen. Hmm. They're ranked at number 31 on VH1's 100 Greatest Artists of All Time. I think that's a little high. They're ranked number 70 in the greatest metal bands of all time.
Okay.
I'm sorry, then the greatest bands of all time, not just...
Gotcha, okay. Yeah. Oh, and 31 in their greatest hard rock.
Yeah, and then 70 in greatest bands of all time.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, and then in 1989, they won the American Music Award for Favorite Heavy Metal Hard Rock Artist, as well as Heavy Metal Hard Rock Album of the Year.
Wow, and that would have been for Adrenalize? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, 89, I guess for Hysteria.
Yeah, it would have been Hysteria.
That big gap between Hysteria.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's say, like Hammond, you don your earplugs and you go to see a Def Leppard concert. What songs are you expecting to? What song are you expecting that they will have played more than any other one? And I'm going to let you read the list.
Okay.
And then we can talk about it because I agree with the whole list.
Okay. So my choices are Rock of Ages, Photograph, Pour Some Sugar on Me, because someone said earlier in the show, it's probably one of their signature songs.
Yeah.
Foolin', Rocket, and Let's Get Rocked. And
okay. Rocket.
Yeah. So my choice, though, and I think you probably agree with me, is Rock of Ages.
Yeah, only because of how long ago they released it. I mean, I think I'll kind of throw Bringing On the Heartbreak in there as well, because again, it came out on High and Dry. It was really early on. Mm-hmm. And I'd say it's a big enough hit that they don't do a concert without doing Bringing On the Heartbreak. But I think Rock of Ages is probably number one. And I'd probably put Pour Some Sugar and Bring It On the Heartbreak is like 2 and 3. Let's see what it actually is. Well done. Yes. Number one, Rock of Ages. Very good. 1,823 plays in concert. Photograph, number two. Didn't even consider Photograph.
I did. I put Photograph on there.
List. That's true. That's number two. Foolin', Foolin', number three. Tied with Pour Some Sugar on Me. Both played 1,659 times in concert. Animal, Hysteria. Bring It On the Heartbreak, not until number seven. Armageddon, It, Love Bites, and Rocket, rounding out the top 10.
Yeah.
No big surprises here, yeah. I don't think.
That's a standard fare for Def Leppard right there.
It totally is. Their number one cover, most played cover in concert, is one that they did include on their Yeah album, but I'll bet you they were playing this before. Yeah, because of how many times it's been played. Number 21 on the list, Rock On by David Essex. They've played 559 times in concert.
And is it that Hey You, that one?
Yep, exactly. Okay, yeah. Hey kids, rock and roll, rock on.
Now, that was who popularized that in the early 90s? Who was that?
Oh, there was another band that did. Michael Damian, who did... a version in the 90s, and I'm trying to see. I know he released it early on, and it's been redone. There we go. 1989 was his big hit version of it.
Wasn't he like a soap opera star? Didn't he follow the Rick Springfield path to fame?
The Rick Springfield and Jack Wagner, I think so.
He looks like he would have been a soap star.
He looks like, and he's got the name like he would have been a soap star.
Yeah.
He apparently did a lot of stuff on with Andrew Lloyd Webber's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah, like he did. He played Joseph for a while.
Yeah. Either soap operas or 21 Jump Street. Why am I thinking he was on? Oh, no, there you go. Young and the Restless. That's where he was. Yeah.
Yeah. We should do Rick Springfield sometime.
For the show?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, he did he apparently did a sequel to Marley and Me called Marley and Me, The Puppy Years.
Oh my, that's a prequel.
It would have to be. I'm sorry, yes. Did I say sequel? I meant a prequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably doesn't end in a sad way like the first one.
And I bet you it still has crappy CG, just like all the other prequels we know and love.
Oh, geez. Yeah, don't. Oh, man. All right. Let's get to, speaking of covers, let's talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. all right, in all the stuff that they've done, all the different covers that they've done, I could not find a Beatles cover, which blows my mind because I've been doing an entire cover album, not including any Beatles, having bonus tracks, B-sides, things like that, and not doing any Beatles kind of as a surprise. So the one I would like to hear is a Beatles cover, and one that's very prominent as far as the harmonization, and that is Because. It's that one that's almost all a cappella with very faint strings and keyboards in it. But I'd want them to rough it up. I'd want them to leopardize it, adrenalize it. That would be my pick for a cover song for them.
So I kind of went a different direction. I took a song that's pretty sparse, and I'd want them to guitar it up and harmonize it up. And I'd want to see how Joe Elliott handles trying to translate the vocal style of Pet Shop Boys' West End Boys song.
Oh, yeah, or West End Girls.
West End Girls, sorry, yeah, West End Girls.
Yeah, that's a good, that'd be a good one.
It'd be interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I mean, that the kind of rappishness of the verses lends itself to the love is like a bomb, baby, come on, get it on.
Yep.
Yeah, so that could be kind of cool. I like it.
And then hearing them harmonize through the choruses would be pretty, I mean, it's standard Def Leppard motif, but I'd like to hear them do it with that song.
For sure. No, that's cool. I like it. Very good. All right. Now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. No, now is the time that we do our playlist. This is when we pick five songs that kind of jumped out to us. We usually try to stay away from greatest hits, although I think between the two of us, I actually was the one who strayed into that land a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm trying to make up for the last few weeks where there are a couple weeks in a row where I just danced firmly in hit land and didn't care.
Sure. And come on, let's face it. There were artists that we played where we just had to pick. Anyway, all right, starting with my first one, and this is a hit, Hysteria, the title track from the album. It's, you know, I think it rode the popularity away from all their other stuff. But when you listen to it on its own, the guitar, you know, it's a slower song. It's not a ballad by that definition, but it is a slower beat song. And I really do like the way it's delivered. And it's kind of like a, it's definitely like a night song. You know, it's not a day rocker arena track.
It's a solid mid-tempo rocker.
It really is. Yeah, it's really, really good. Number two, Now I'm Here, which is a bonus track they included on the deluxe edition of Adrenalize. It's one they recorded at a rock festival, and they're joined by Brian May. It's a Queen cover, and when you're joined by Brian May for a Queen cover, it's going to be damn good. And they do a great job with it. This is, I'd say, one of their best covers. It doesn't hurt that they have Brian May joining them, but I think they would do just fine with a cover of this song without Brian May helping them with it as well. Speaking of covers, my number three is also a cover. Jimi Hendrix's Little Wing. Which is another bonus track that they included on Adrenalize. It's a twofer covers on Soundography today. Yeah, it's just another good one. And they do a lot of the same things that other people who've covered Little Wing do, like Sting and I think Living Color does. a really good cover of it. But I don't know. They put some Def Leppard-ness into it. It's still within their period when they were being true to the sound that made them famous. Mm-hmm. The next one is Slang from the album Slang. From that one time when Def Leppard was trying to be Collective Soul, although I think you nailed it when you said Jesus Jones, very Jesus Jonesy. Listen, I don't know what, I have no idea what Slang means in the context of the song. They're talking about getting soaking wet and they just want that slang. And so sometimes it's a noun, sometimes it's a verb. I don't know what it is, but then I didn't know what Pour Some Sugar on Me was in 1986 either. So whatever.
Yeah.
And then the last one, we've kind of compared them a couple times to Led Zeppelin. Pearl of Euphoria, also from the album Slang. The shadow.
Wow, you really like that Slang album.
I didn't think I did, but those were, you know, it basically as I listen, when I like something, I drag it out into a playlist. And looking back, it's kind of surprising that I had two from Adrenalize and two from Slang. I felt like anything from Hysteria and Pyromania were, it's like a minefield of greatest hits. So I couldn't really touch any of those, but those other ones I felt a little safer with. But this is their Kashmir, man. I mean, it's like a sweeping desert, wind blowing, majestic kind of song, and I really, really like it.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned before, I had a tough time finding five songs that were in that middle ground because either I thought they were kind of lower rung or they were already hits. So right, sure. I put a lot of work into trying to find that middle ground for me, and I think I did okay. So the first one I picked was The Overture from the EP, but also from their first album, the debut album.
One of the songs that they brought back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's musically, it's really interesting. It's kind of proggy. They got some real strong Thin Lizzy DNA in the guitars. And I kind of wish they'd leaned into this a little bit more, but history proves that that wasn't the case.
Right.
And then we fast forward to Retroactive. I picked the Desert Song, and this one's really, really grungy in the verse. It could be like a Soundgarden tune. I wish they could drift a little further from their regular chorus structure. Like, I love the harmonies. I think they're great. But after a while, after hearing it, after song after song after song, you kind of think, oh, hey, look, it's a Def Leppard chorus. One, two, three, go.
It's time for the harmonies.
Yeah. And right. I kind of wish that they would either mix it up or do something a little different sometimes because it does get a little samey. And a song like that, too, would really lend itself well to it. So...
sure.
And then I picked Paper Sun from Euphoria. Does it hurt to remember? Does it help to forget? Do you know what you started? When you let the fuse out, regret. I really like this. They kind of created something really interesting, and I wish there was more of this in their catalog. And I will throw a caveat too. I did pick a lot of the songs that are like the first song on the album. And I think it has more to do with them knowing how to front load an album than anything else.
That is a talent that bands should have, is knowing that, especially in the day and age where, you know, people put a CD into the CD player, as they're doing something else, and they'll listen to the first couple songs and then they'll move on to something else.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, they knew how to front load, and it's a, it's a skill.
For sure.
Then I picked Now from X. This song is better than it should be.
Okay. I like Jerry. That's an interesting description.
That album isn't great. Slang isn't great for me. But Now is a song that is better than it should be. And that's really all I can say about that one, is because I just liked it and I kept listening to the rest of the album waiting for that to happen again, and it never did.
Yeah.
And then from the big pile of poo called The Songs from the Sparkle Lounge.
I'm amazed you found something from there that you like.
I did. And here's the caveat for it, though. Is it felt like a different band. It didn't feel like Def Leppard. If I didn't know if it was Def Leppard, I'd think this was some group of fresh young punks breaking new ground and cutting their teeth on their debut album. Because it doesn't sound like Def Leppard. It sounds like somebody else. And if I hadn't known, I would have thought, oh, who are these guys trying to do something Def Leppard-y?
Gotcha. Okay. That's cool.
So Go is a pretty good song. It's not like, it's not,
it just isn't a Def Leppard song.
Yeah, it's kind of like, so Kiss released an album called Songs from the Elder, which is a concept album, which is so un-Kiss like most people don't even like it. However, I do, because it's a very un-Kiss Kiss album that's a concept album. But if you play it, you'll have a hard time picking its Kiss out of a lineup.
I don't know what to say about that.
That's okay. You don't have anything. We can move on.
Let's move on. Well, we're moving on to the end. That's it. That is Def Leppard in a nutshell, in an hour and 15 or whatever, whatever it turns out to be. Good. You know, like you said, it was a fun week, and I enjoyed some parts of it way more than I expected. I think Songs from the Sparkle Lounge, I didn't as much, but whatever. Next week we are going to delve into kind of the '70s. I say delve a lot. We're going to travel back in time, to the '60s and seventies. And a guy named Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam now is the name he goes by, but, listening to his entire catalog, both as Cat and Yusuf, should be interesting. I know Wild World and I know Father to Son. I'm trying to think of what else I know. I mean, it's going to be a lot of new music to me.
Yeah, oh, I'm actually really looking forward to this, because this one is the definition of soundography, where we go in with a couple songs under our belt and then do our best to learn things.
Exactly. Yep, I like that too. Between now and then, you can email us. We want you to. soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. Follow us on Twitter @thesoundography. Doesn't matter what that sticker you got says, our Twitter address is @thesoundography. Soundography.com is our website. Go there for previous episodes and information about the episodes you're listening to right now. You'll find our playlist. Our Spotify playlist is a link in every episode, as well as an Amazon link to buy the album we recommend. I think I'm going to send people to The Vault.
That's a good one. Yeah,
it's of their greatest hits albums. It feels like the right combination of solid tracks and not a lot of filler.
I'm surprised you're just not going to send them to Yeah.
I know, right? They can find that on their own. You'll also find a link to our Patreon if you want to support us by throwing us a buck or two a month. That's nothing. Like a buck or two a month, you spend that on aglets for your shoelaces is what you spend that on. So put on us instead. Of course, you can leave us reviews over there at iTunes or at Stitcher or Spreaker or wherever you leave your reviews. Don't leave it on Yelp, though. We're not going to see those.
No.
I wonder if anybody's ever done a
podcast Yelp
podcast review on Yelp.
See, that sounds like a night attack stunt.
Right, exactly. They're gonna create a Yelp presence and have people review it as if it were a restaurant or something.
That totally is a Brushwood stunt.
100%. But that is going to do it for me and him. Anything you want to say to close us out?
I just want to remind people that we aren't experts. We pull our information from places on the internet, and sometimes they're wrong, and so therefore we are too sometimes, and we're not experts.
No. Okay. Apparently you've gotten an email or two this week that somebody corrected something. Okay. Well, I was going to say we're finished. That is going to do it for Soundography today. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying thanks for joining us here on Soundography. We'll see you right here next time.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.